Hallo, du liebe Sängerin, Musikerin oder Songwriterin. Diese Podcast-Folge heute ist auf Englisch, denn mein heutiger Interviewgast Rima Müller-Westernhagen hat zwar auch deutsche Wurzeln, ist allerdings in London aufgewachsen und spricht hauptsächlich Englisch und deswegen haben wir entschieden, das Interview auf Englisch aufzunehmen. Falls dir das Probleme bereitet, dann schau diese Folge doch gerne auf unserem YouTube-Kanal, denn dort kannst du dir ganz einfach über die Untertitelfunktion die Übersetzung dieses Interviews anschauen. Ich wünsche dir in jedem Fall, ob du es hier hörst oder auf YouTube, ganz viel Spaß mit dieser Folge mit Rima.
And we're getting a lot of those record executives, people from Spotify, people from, you know, people who are on podcasts giving advice. The advice is so often make stuff every day, do stuff every day, post and post and post and post and be on TikTok and post again. And it cuts people like us out because we can't make a post every day. We can't create all the time. We can't go on 100 tours a year and be playing and playing and playing. We can't do that, you know, and even when I venture into that space and I will do, let's say, a little tour, but for me, a tour, I won't do more than 3 shows in a row without a break. If I do more than 3, if I do have the rare occasion where it's 4 shows or something, I need at least a week off. And starting to create a culture where that's okay, because I'm not being lazy, I'm not being mean, I'm not trying to be difficult. I just know myself. And as you say, you know that kind of, this is too much for me. So yes, online concerts, getting out there in different ways, creating things on your terms is so important.
Very, very welcome to the Song Recording Made Easy podcast by the Recording Studio for Women. We're a German podcast, today we're interviewing you in English. Hello.
Hello, Dankeschön. Hi.
Hi. I want to start by asking you, what name, how should I name you? Because you seem to have like Mimi and Sarah and Rima, and I know they're all part of you, but what's the name you want me to name you by today?
Absolutely. As you like. I am Mimi to my friends. I always have been. And Rima is my middle name, which I use as my artist name. So anybody who do check me out as an artist, I'm Rima, R-E-E-M-A, and you can come and say hello to me on any platform. It's all good. Mimi is what my friends call me. And Sarah is just for doctors and bank managers.
Okay, so not Sarah. Okay.
Let's see Mimi.
Mimi. We want to, with the song recording made easy, we want to encourage especially women to learn how to produce their own music and how to manage their own careers. And that's why I want to talk to you, because you seem to have entered the industry very early. You started as a musician very early, and you had to, because everybody can imagine if you started this at a very young age, you had to kind of reinvent yourself several times, and that needs some courage. And these are some things we want to talk about today. And I want to begin by starting with those early beginnings. I read that you started at the early age of 7, where you started to make music. Take us there, please, in those early days of your career, or I don't know, being as a musician.
Yes, it's a very early age to get started with songwriting. But it was something that I think, you know, I know it sounds very overdramatic, but I think it really saved me as a person, as an expressive human. I didn't realize at that time that I was an autistic person. I just thought there was something very wrong with me and that I couldn't communicate with people in a way that I wanted to in a way that reflected my, the heart that was inside didn't come out on the outside, on the surface. I hadn't yet learned to express myself. And my mum's really good friend, Chris, who used to look after me a lot, he handed me my mum's guitar and he just said, look, I can teach you a couple of chords. And I started kind of playing these chords. And he just said to me one sentence, which was like, I said to him, oh, what should I learn? What songs should I learn? And he just said, make some up. And it was like permission. Like I'd been given permission to do that, to express myself. And I started writing immediately. And it was a way of talking to people, a way of communicating in a way that I felt didn't judge who I was, wasn't looking for the correct answers all the time. It was totally mine. And it was a way that I could just kind of get out what was on the inside, really.
Mm. And you mentioned something very important. You were given permission. Many yes. of the musicians I work with, we work with, and including me in a way, were not given that permission. Might have to do with us being women or whatever we learned from our moms. I don't know. So in my maybe misconception, I thought if I only had been given this permission, then everything would have turned out easy. And for some time, I know it did for you. Like you did, you signed with a major label pretty early, at an early age where most of us, like, yeah, it was not within reach for me, I can say. So that would have been something like a dream come true to me. And yes. Let's talk about how, what led you there and your experience with that. Like you had your first band and how did you get there?
Yes, I hear you. And I think that that is, it's so, so important to say that and to understand that we don't need the permission. We have it already. It's already in us. But I think you're absolutely right. I think as women, we are told to kind of be quiet, be second, be smaller. And I'm so happy to see kind of younger generations coming up without so much of this, I think, but it's still there. It's there in the background. And I think we need to be very careful with these kind of boundaries and glass ceilings and things, that we do shatter them. But at the same time, they're very sneaky. They move, they change shape, but they're still there. And so this is why it's so important to have platforms like this, where we encourage each other and give each other permission, because we need it sometimes. We need validation, we need support, we need help. And I think me signing with a major label, firstly, I will say right out of the gate, was a mistake. It was not for me. It was not a good decision. However, very much like you, it was my dream. And I always felt like if I could just get that support, if I could just get that validation. And I loved having this thing that I could, because with most other jobs, for example, if you are trying to get into the medical profession, and as a woman, that's really tough too. You at least have this piece of paper, this degree, this thing that you can hold up and you can say, I'm a doctor. Look, it says so on this paper. But as musicians, we don't have that. There's no piece of paper that we can hold up and say, I'm good now. See, it says so here. Which is why we end up getting controlled by these situations where we can go into a room and I could say to my family members, I don't know, like little Christmas situation where you're meeting a friend of your mom and they're like, oh, what are you doing with your life? That you can go, oh, actually, I just signed to Warner Music, you know, and it makes it feel better, but it's not better. What you do, what I didn't realize at the time is it's like we see these things as evil or as good, or are these people good people or not good people? These are perfectly good people. These were very nice people that I worked with. apart from one, but never mind. Most of them were really good people. And there were a lot of really great women that I worked with there who were absolutely outstanding. My product manager, Nina, was fantastic. That's a lot. But what we have to understand about major labels is that they are an amplifier. So when you start too early, what you're doing is amplifying something that doesn't exist. They cannot create something from nothing. What you have to do with your fan base is grow. And if you haven't done that early organic growth and somebody comes in and tries to build a fan base from zero, this is much better on a grassroots level. This is much better when you stand up to a huge machine that is a major label. You have to do it from a position of strength. And I didn't. I did it from a position of tiny little me creating my first album, not really knowing what I was doing and being so super excited. And so like, I get to make an album. I can't believe this. And of course, I had a lot of experience. I'd done hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of gigs. I'd written loads of songs. I'd been in the studio many times before. It wasn't like I didn't have that experience. But when it comes to media and marketing, that is a whole different. If you've never released something before, it is extremely difficult to just be thrown in the deep end, to understand how to tackle an interview, how to understand when you get weird messages from people, when you get horrible comments, when people are super rude to you or weirdly sexual or whatever it is that they're doing, you need that support. And so it's like amplifying. You're a little green shoot that's grown from this precious seed that is your creativity. You grow this little leaf that comes out. And it's early, a major label will take that leaf and go, and like squash it. If you're already a tree, sure, we can do business. But if you're just a little leaf, keep growing. It's okay. Mm. You're going to grow. You're going to grow more. But this set me back. This really set me back. I cannot emphasize that enough. And I know that there's going to be people sitting out there going, yeah, but funding, I would love to. This stuff is really expensive. I hate that it was said recently by the idiots at Spotify just being like, oh yeah, you can make content for free. No, you can't. And if you're making content for free, someone's working for free. It means they're giving part of themselves, which they shouldn't be. Content is not free. Creativity is not free. And even if you haven't spent money, it's not free. It comes from you. It's a piece of you. You're giving a piece of yourself. So this idea that somebody's going to come along and say, here's some money. Of course, all of us are like, okay, yes. But honestly, it's not worth it. Please value yourself higher than that. You are so precious. You are so much more precious than you realize. Mm-hmm. So that's my takeaway from it.
Mm-hmm. I think a part of me wanted to knew it had to protect myself because I was that little plant and I knew how vulnerable I would have been to judgment, unfair criticism. And I can only imagine because I know how I was at 17, like my facade was very strong. That's what people reflected, but I knew how vulnerable I was inside at that time and how much I would have sought the validation, not the money at all, the validation. And that's very risky place to give that outside of, to somebody outside of yourself, because then you're dependent on them. So yeah. How did you realize that this is what happened, that something is off, like that's something, that's a position you're, maybe that's not healthy for you or not good for your mental health, or how did you realize it? I guess it took some time to understand that you are not the problem.
Yeah. And I, do you know what? I didn't realize it. I didn't realize it until years later. And at the time, what I did was became extremely ill. I was mentally really not well. And I was physically as a result, really not well. It manifested in a horrific eating disorder, and it was the one thing that I could control. I thought at the time, this was a time when everyone was looking like a Super Bowl, and I looked at them. Mm-hmm. You know, I looked at them and I looked at me and I went, what? I can't even be in the same room as these people. I'm not the same species as these people. So I just thought, okay, I'm going to make myself really small and hopefully it'll be fine. And I just got smaller and smaller. And you know, I think I didn't realize what the point was of the whole thing. And I didn't feel like I deserved it. I blame myself and I blame my body. And I said, I can't believe that my body gave up on me when I needed it the most. And I can't believe that my mind gave up on me when I needed it the most. And I said, okay, I'm a weak person. I'm not a good artist. I should just disappear and I should be behind the scenes. So after all of this blew up, I then wrote with other people, which I would recommend massively to anyone who's not already doing that. Please go and learn from other people and watch them and help them grow. Helping somebody else grow and develop and grow into that tree from the little leaf, this will make you grow into your own tree so much faster. It's the most wonderful thing. So this took years, and it took me a really long time to kind of circle back and forgive myself for wrecking it as I saw it. Like, you wrecked it. And you said a really interesting thing that you somehow knew that you somehow protect yourself from this situation. I think this is what we do. And the body and the mind know better than our conscious self. So we can say, this is my dream, I want to do this. And you know, there are some built-in safety brakes in there somewhere that go, this is not a world for you, hun. You're an artist. You don't need this. This is not a place for artists. This is a place for like really hard business people who just want, you know, and this is not the right environment, because you want to do, you want to express yourself. You want to make things that are yours, and you want to spread ultimately tell your emotional story, and you want to spread love. Mm-hmm. And you cannot do that from that position, from that place. You can't do that. So, yes, it takes a long time to realize that. And still I have my days where I'm like, why did you do that? Like, why can't you be more like this? Why can't you be more this or that? I'm just not. This is me. Mm-hmm. This is what I have to offer, and my strengths and my weaknesses. I work on them, but this is who I am. It takes time.
There are a lot of similarities to my story. I had an eating disorder too, very heavily, until the age of 18. That's how I knew I'm vulnerable like that. I need to protect myself. But what I hadn't figured out, like I thought I would go the safe way. So I studied something else. I studied business. I was trying to be the good girl in a bad environment. Not a good idea either. So what my body did, I like the eating disorder, like I kind of forced myself I just stopped it. But the patterns seeking for validation still remained. So what had happened is, after I studied and worked as an auditor. So I was still seeking validation in a different way. And my body then, just like similar to yours, it just said, no, we're not doing this. My body had a chronic illness and a renal failure. Like, my kidneys just said, we're out. So I can really confirm it took years to overcome that. Like, I was sad too. I was angry at my body. I felt like a failure too. And then came a point where I was like, you know what? I'm still alive though. And I learned a lot. And what I know is I'm not going back there. So let me find out for once now where I do want to go. So when was that moment for you? And how, like, how did you know where you wanted to go, what you wanted to do, who you wanted to be?
I hear you. And what an amazing story. I mean, that's beautiful. And it's incredible that you've picked yourself up and just pushed yourself forward and said, no, you know, this is who I am. This is who I'm meant to be. And I think it's that body grief almost that we feel afterwards where we, I think a really big factor is time. And I think, you know, we can watch these white bearded country stars going on and these dudes getting up on stage and the Rolling Stones getting older and older. And, you know, that's fine. But women, we are not allowed to age. We're not allowed to, you know, we have time. And I think that is the other huge slice of the permission that we need to give ourselves and each other. Have time, take time. And a really lovely friend of mine, Stefan, who plays with me on bass clarinet and does arrangements with me, you know, he said to me, you know, I was kind of getting upset about it, I think, in my, you know, sort of plowing into my 30s going, oh, I've screwed it up, haven't I? I missed the bus. And he was like, what? You can't write the things you write in your 20s because you haven't lived in that way. You can't skip the experience and go straight to the really great songwriting. You need to develop. So I think the biggest revelation was, again, permission to get older. And with that, permission to develop, permission to keep doing things. And my big moment was I kind of sat down with myself and I said, okay, what is it you're actually trying to do? Are you trying to become the next big pop star? Are you trying to be some kind of respected jazz singer? Like, what are you trying to do? And I realized, like, I wanted to create softness and share love. And these were my two little goals. And I want to help people connect with their emotions and tell them that it's okay to feel and it's okay to go through these emotions and to guide people through these emotions. And then this goal became something else. This wasn't about how many streams I was going to get or how many followers I had or about how many songs I was going to write this week. It was just like a kind of a goal that was further in the distance that I could just keep referring back to. And I remind myself that when my perfectionism kicks in, when my people pleasing kicks in, when my need for validation kicks in, I just say to myself, you know, did you show up at that particular show? And did you show up with a big heart, ready to give love, ready to spread softness, ready to spread kindness, ready to talk to people? And yes, I did. So don't worry you got that chord wrong, or don't worry that, you know, how many people were there or what, you know, what did you achieve? How many things did you sell? You know, it's just, if it starts to become less about that, and I'm not saying that it, you know, that to take away from people who are trying to build a business, who are trying to have this as your job. Of course those things are important. They keep us going. We need them. But at the same time, hold that value of what is exactly the goal here? And so that didn't happen in a moment. It happened in, you know, several years, and it's still happening now. I still have my days where I wake up and go, what are you doing with your life? You should have done something else. But I think we all have those days where you're like, sure. I give up? Am I really terrible and no one's telling me? And, you know, all of this kind of thing. Everyone just being nice. Like, that, all of those little thoughts, you know, they can all be defeated with one thing, which is, you know, what am I trying to do?
Hmm. What I can reflect back to you for those moments, right before we started this interview, I felt a little stressed, like, I don't know, the weather or whatever. And I listened to your song, I Wasn't Loved Enough, and maybe you weren't loved enough too. And it was so calming. It really resonated, the softness and the love. I felt it. I really felt it, and it calmed me down. So if that was the goal, then you're achieving it. Yeah.
Thank you so much. That's the best thing to hear. You see, this is what we're trying to do. Definitely.
It's about the music. Yeah. And so since you have become your more authentic artist self, musician, I think if I understood correctly, you have produced two albums or released two albums since, right?
And yes.
Yeah. Take us there a bit, like the process, like, you know, you still have those patterns, just like me, the perfectionism, the doubts and whatever. So how was the process of the first album for you and then the second one that just came out recently? Yeah.
So I started off doing vinyl only. So I've got two vinyl only records and then two albums that are out, two EPs that are out that are digital. And another one soon. But so the vinyl was a really good gateway into that because a friend of mine, Guy Sternberg, he said to me, let's just go in the studio and do some live stuff. And then when we've recorded it, it's done. So my overthinking, my perfectionism, my kind of, this kind of, when I do another thing after Warner's, it has to be perfect. This all went out the window because there's just somebody recording. And so I learned a lot from making those records and I took it into the digital records that I did where we worked with a live performance at the core. So this was myself and the guitar, how the song was written exactly as it is and embracing its imperfections, embracing all of that, because I think at the moment you can do absolutely everything. You can go in there, you can tune stuff, you can time stuff, you can turn it on its head, you can add this, you can create perfection, as it were. So I think the way to stand out now is to create imperfection. So I think the way that we do that is a lot of live performance, a lot of letting go, not sitting there and listening through to it and going, oh, that one note, that one thing, let's cut it out. Like just embracing performance. Mm-hmm. That became kind of the core of everything that I've done as Rima. So all the stuff that you hear, you know, it's not going to be cut together. It's not going to be, you know, it's just this kind of natural embracing. And it sort of goes with that embracing of myself as I am. So that's the core. And then lovely Stefan Baumann did the arrangements for the two records and he can do wonderful things with woodwind and brass and all kinds of score arrangements. We chose woodwind and brass for this because they're breath instruments. So it's a little bit like having people singing with me, but through the instruments. So this was very exciting. And now we've finally just finished a tour with the woodwind and brass in real time on the stage, which we don't get to do very often because it is, full disclosure, super expensive to have lots of people with you. Normally we're just a duo show or I just play on my own. So that was incredible. We had these incredible women playing woodwind and brass with us who are incredible musicians and wonderful people. So this is my little full circle moment. And I'm finishing up the next record now. And my goal is to get a little bit faster because I'm quite prolific in writing, but then I procrastinate massively before I release things. So I don't want to hold on to things so long. It's not at the moment, it's not working. I still am holding on to things for ages, but I really want to get to a place. You know how it is. I really want to get to a place where I'm like, I made this, here it is. And I'm like, oh, how should I release it? Who should I talk to? Let me have another 9 phone calls with 9 different people who are all going to tell me 9 different things just to confuse my brain even more. Just put it out. Please don't be me. Put it out.
Same. This year, I wanted to release my first album in summer, by summer. Yeah, and I've had like a block since. So yeah, I know how that feels.
I hear you.
You said quite in the beginning how important finding a tribe was for you.
Yes.
How did you find that? It's like it. I mean, I'm over 40 now, and I feel like I'm now finding my tribe, you know?
Yes, it takes time. Mm-hmm. It takes time. And I think the way that you find really great people is actually to make peace with yourself. And I think as soon as you start embracing yourself and forgiving yourself and being kind to yourself, and like we were talking about, forgiving your body and its limitations, forgiving all the things that you need and embracing those things as, yeah, I need those. Like, I don't get angry at my cat because he needs to get fed. Like, I don't go like, oh, you're rubbish. I can't be bothered to feed you. I love him. I love him for who he is. And you need to extend that same thing to yourself. You know, I need off time. I was just talking to a lovely couple of musicians who were thinking of touring together next year. And we had a phone call, and I just said, look, right off the bat, I'm really sorry. I need my space. If I finish a show, I can't do this communal living together, going for drinks afterwards. I need to sit in a room on my own and go, what just happened? I just played a show. And it doesn't matter how many shows I play. I need that space. And I was telling him this, and he was so kind. He was like, yes, you just tell me what you need and we do it. And it was like, me, even 2 years ago, would not have been able to have that conversation with somebody and say, I need this, I need that, because I feel like I'm being a total diva asking for space or asking for information. You know, I love to have a photo of the stage before I get on the stage. I love to see where I'm going to play. I don't like just showing up. It makes me particularly anxious. I know for some people this is doesn't matter. So I think you find the right people by treating yourself with respect and with kindness and allowing your needs and your true self out. And then you'll see who's attracted to that and who's gonna share with you in your strong self. And I think the sad thing is, if you are going on a journey with yourself, with your self-esteem, with your sense of self, you lose friends. And it's not their fault. And it's not your fault. It's just that if you've had no boundaries your whole life, and then you've built friendships based on no boundaries and no self-respect, inserting that later feels like a punishment. The person is obviously going to get annoyed because this friendship no longer benefits them. You're no longer doing everything to please them and to get their validation and to have this, you know, you're sort of going, no, I don't feel like doing that. And they go, what? Because you've always done everything in your power to please them. So you can't have the right people if you're not treating yourself right. I have a few people that stayed. I have a few people who've just been incredible friends no matter what, but it's hard. And it's, I don't blame the people that I've moved on from. But I'm much happier now. And I think this is totally like we said again about time, it's totally okay to be finding yourself in your 40s. And it's totally okay in your 40s, your 50s, your 60s, whatever age you're at now, it's totally okay. If you're just finding your creativity now, fantastic. We want to hear from you. We need these stories. Like, it's wonderful to be 20. It's wonderful to be 15. It's wonderful to be making music at 7. Go for it. But these are not, we want to hear a range of voices and a range of experiences. And if we only hearing from very young people, we are not doing our job as artists. We're not speaking about issues that only hit us in our adult years. And we're constantly learning, constantly maturing. And, you know, this is beautiful. And it does, it takes time. And, you know, the loneliness I had in my 20s, I would not go back there for the world. I mean, just the searing aloneness and this feeling of, I better change myself and hide myself as much as I can, because I'm really weird. And if people see who I really am, they're going to run away. And it's so validating just to say, I don't care. And then you show up as yourself, and the person who's supposed to be with you will literally just show up next to you. It's like, oh, hey. And they're like, oh, that's really cool that you said that or you did that. And you're like, really? Because I've been hiding that for a long time.
Absolutely. You said it before, like you had the diagnosis pretty late in life with autism. I suspect I have very high amount of ADHD, but I'm not diagnosed because I'm done with, I have too many diagnoses, so I'm not ready yet. Like I with the kidney, you know, so it's enough for me to suspect it and act accordingly and create a life where I can live according to my needs. Like it all comes down to what I need and respect what I need. So I don't have much experience with that. So tell me, how did the diagnose, like what did it do for you? Does it help your arts or does it hinder you making music? Like how did it affect your life or does affect your life or the boundaries you have to keep up?
Well, I think for me, again, it's that validation word again. It was such a release for me and also for my mom, how difficult that was for her raising me on her own and having a lot of people giving her constantly advice. Oh, your child is difficult. You need this. Oh, you're not doing this. Or you're not doing. And she was doing everything. She was an incredible mom and she did her absolute best and I adore her. And so that was deeply painful for me to know that that had happened. And I think really a big release to say to her, you raised a very autistic child on your own. And that autistic child is now independent, able to live by herself, able to do things. You are an incredible mama. So that was a really wonderful thing that I could give to my mom to say to her, wow. And also to say to me, wow, you did this, you know. And the lady who diagnosed me said, you really haven't had any support? And I said, no. And, you know, all those letters home from school saying, you know, why hasn't she turned up? Or why did she run out of class? Or why is she doing this? Why does she keep screaming? Why can't she tie her shoelaces yet, but can make art and do paintings and things? You know, there was all these questions that I had. And one of the biggest helps for me knowing about my autism is the thing that they call spiky skill set, which really means that you're very, very good at some things and very, very bad at others. And I always wanted to know what the hell is wrong with me, because, and it's hard to explain that to people because, for example, shoelaces, still a problem. Still hate tying shoelaces. And I just couldn't do it for ages. But like, I was like top of my class in science, you know, like I could tell you, you know, all the elements in the periodic table. I could tell you what reacted with what. I can make a shirt from scratch. I can do all sorts of things. I can write you a song, but I can't tie shoelaces. I can't open bananas. I have no idea what to do with bananas. I need to cut them. I don't know what that is. You know, there's several like weird little things, opening doors, very difficult. You know, just little stuff that was so hard for me to learn and to do, and to have that explanation was huge for me to tell that little person living in me, the little girl that thought there was something huge wrong with her, to say to her, no, that wasn't your fault. That's all good. You did your best. And, you know, all those things that I had so much shame around, you know, like if we had my my sports teacher had no idea who I was at school because I would run and I would hide if there would be a sports lesson. Why? Because I have no coordination at all. And it's very funny watching me trying to run or trying to hit a ball, or, you know, because I had that inbuilt dyspraxia that meant that I couldn't play tennis or, you know, do the things that the other kids did. And a lot of children communicate via sport and via movement and dancing as well. I mean, it's hard. And now I let my inner weirdo out. And when I dance, I look absolutely ridiculous and I don't care. I do it for the enjoyment because I love music and I love rhythm and I will just throw myself around. And I know in my heart that the people that abandon me because I do that are going to are people who don't see me and don't want, you know, my, if you don't accept my autism, you don't accept me. So that was really huge. But then seeing how, I think the thing that broke my heart a little bit, or the negative about it, was how unwilling people are to accommodate and how unwilling some people are to really take that in or research it or think about it, because, and it did make me really open my eyes to inclusion when it comes to gigs, when it comes to touring. This is a very unfriendly environment to all disabled people of mm-hmm. all kinds. And, you know, we're leaving people out and we're leaving people behind and we're losing these incredible voices and incredible talents because there are enormous amounts of incredibly talented people with chronic illness, with disabilities, with, you know, different neurotypes like mine. We need to make those accommodations, and it can be something as small as making sure that you have a proper backstage. And not accusing artists of being divas if they say, I can't be out in a crowd and then get on a stage. Like, it's so hard to get on a stage anyway. To be out in a crowd before is overwhelming and so nice. You know, it's so nice when people say hi. I love it. I love it so much. But I can only say hi after. And so I I've sat in cupboards. I've like crawled under things, you know, just to have that little space before. So I can't imagine that what it's like to have venues where, you know, you're in a wheelchair, you can't get up the stairs to get into the venue even. I mean, we really need to look at these things and start having way more conversations about accessibility, because my needs are really small. They're really, my accommodations are really, really tiny. And I'm often told, no, suck it up. What are you talking about? So I can't imagine somebody who has more needs than me, how that would feel. And so I think that's been the kind of eye opener, because we don't think about these things in our daily life. But it has brought that definitely to my attention. And I think that's definitely something that I've started noticing more as I go about my stuff.
I love that so much. It's like you kind of helped me realize that, because I always say I can stand in front of a crowd and sing. I can do it now. But the exhaustion I have afterwards is like, it takes me days, honestly, hours, days to... I cannot explain it, you know? So that's why I don't want to do it. I couldn't, and I could not travel and do that. You know, this is, I'm just talking one stage, you know, but a tour, I have absolutely no interest in it. It's not for me. I don't have this type of energy. So I'm thinking of other aspect, like an online live concert or something, because as you said before, we need all the experiences, like my experiences, your experiences, when we sing about them, the way we can, you know, some can tour, that's good for them. And I suspect it's not for anyone really, because most big artists say they're suffering on tour as well. Like, it's not for everyone. So I think, that's a big takeaway, that it's not just okay, but we should even yeah, be creative with how we communicate, how we get our music out, and we don't have to do it the typical type of way with the label and the tour and the big tour and whatever. Get creative, look for what you have to give, because there will be people who need exactly your message, your stories, your experiences.
That's absolutely true. And, you know, focusing in on what we can do rather than focusing in on, oh, I'm a terrible artist because I can't, you know. And it's even creating content at home. Some of us do get, I'm with you completely. Like, I have the same, I have burnout, I have exhaustion. I can't, you know, and to have this, and we're getting a lot of those record executives, people from Spotify, people from, you know, people who are on podcasts giving advice. The advice is so often, make stuff every day, do stuff every day, post and post and post and post and be on TikTok and post again. And it cuts people like us out.
Absolutely.
Because we can't make a post every day. We can't create all the time. We can't go on 100 tours a year and be playing and playing and playing. We can't do that, you know. And even when I venture into that space and I will do, let's say, a little tour, but for me, a tour, I won't do more than 3 shows in a row without a break. If I do more than 3, if I do have the rare occasion where it's 4 shows or something, I need at least a week off. And starting to create a culture where that's okay, because I'm not being lazy, I'm not being mean, I'm not trying to be difficult. I just know myself. And as you say, you know that kind of, this is too much for me. So yes, online concerts, getting out there in different ways, creating things on your terms is so important. And again, we're being told, because it's, you know, like I say, it's the major labels that don't have that kind of power anymore. The goal isn't to get a record deal anymore. Everybody understands the fact that they can just put stuff out digitally. But the barriers shift. And that barrier has been the advice that people get, or the people around that will then create a very rigid structure, and they will send the message out to artists of all kinds saying, if you don't fit this brief, you will never make it. You will never get out. You will never reach people. And it's just not true. You do it on your terms. And if you're doing it, in my book, you're a massive success. If you manage to finish music, be happy with it, put it out into the world, there's so much built-in success just in that, because finishing stuff is so hard. Releasing stuff that's deeply embedded in your heart, in your DNA, that has you all over it, you're putting a piece of yourself out into the world. And if you are a true artist and you're doing that from your heart, no, you cannot release a song every week, every month, whatever. No, you cannot, because where's yourself? If you're ripping out bits of yourself and putting them out every day, I mean, what's left?
Nothing. Yeah, nothing. Literally nothing. Yeah.
You know, you got to do it on your terms, and don't let that stop you from doing it. Because like you say, we're needed, like other voices are needed. And if we give up, there's no us.
Yeah. You know? And I assume it's those many, many, many quiet moments that you have and need that make you create a beautiful song like I Was Love Enough, because I assume people who are constantly on the run and who have very high energy level, they will not even feel that. Like, why should they have to feel that feeling, you know? But I know for myself, it's in the solitude that I have access to the feelings. And that's why I need it too. Me and nature. Yeah.
Absolutely. It's a, like we said earlier, it's a seed. It needs to grow.
Yeah.
And you can't grow anything if you just take this seed and just throw it at everything. Yeah. You're never going to grow your tree. You know, like, we need time. We need nourishment. We need quiet. We need so many things. And this word need, for women particularly, is so difficult. I think it's difficult for everybody, but I think for women particularly, we are absolutely, we have it embedded in our upbringing, in society, in everything that we do. You must not need. You are not allowed. You are needing means you're taking up space. You're taking up energy. You do not have needs. Shut up.
And, you're a giver.
Oh, yeah. It is. Yeah, you're a giver. You just have to give. And, you know, if you can't give, hide yourself because, you know, go away. But it's the reality is we do have needs and creativity has needs. And you can't create something out of nothing. So it's coming from you. So if you turn that in on itself, what is your biggest investment as an artist, as a creator? It's you. If you care for yourself, if you are healthy and happy and loved and in a safe space, you are the most beautifully cared for tool to create creativity. Mm. And so, you know, we don't see any problem in servicing our guitars, buying a new plugin or, you know, creating a wonderful recording environment, buying another microphone, you know, like all these things. Like, yeah, sure. But invest in your health. Mm-hmm. This is the most important investment because it's all coming from you. You know, you're the main thing in this. If you're going to make a business, if you're going to see it in this cold way of making a business, go for it. But your biggest investment's going to be you, your health, mm-hmm. your mental health, everything. It's not going to work without you. Exactly. You're the most important. Yeah. You are your instrument, you know.
You're the source. Care. Yeah, you're yes. the main source of the music that's getting created. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. And this was my big mistake that I didn't see that. Mm. I thought she was the most unimportant thing. I thought she was in the way. I was like, what's she doing here?
Yeah.
I don't want her
yeah.
here.
She's wrong. Like, yeah, yeah, yeah.
yeah.
I remember that and it was a sad feeling. I remember that and very happy we unlearned that and learned how to love ourselves, put ourselves first. So this was a very beautiful conversation. My last question is, you said it, that you are working on an album and I would like to invite you to tell us about it and where people can find you if they want to listen to your music and maybe
Thank
write you,
you
even... Yeah.
Thank you so much. I've so enjoyed talking to you. You're absolutely wonderful. And I can't wait to hear your album. That's so, so exciting. Yeah. Yes, I will have an EP out very soon. The best way to find me, I'm on all the streaming platforms as Reema, R-E-E-M-A. You can find me on Spotify, on Tidal, Deezer, etc. But if you want to get in contact, if you want to ask me any questions or you just want to say hi, I'm Reema Music on Instagram and I'm Reema on Facebook and I'm active on both. It's me on there. It's not a team of bots. It's me. So you can always reach out and I will put all news and when the release will be and everything on there. So, come and join me and say hi.
Yes. I will do that the next time you tour, whenever that will be. But I saw Yay. you were pretty close to me, but I saw that too late. Yeah, you were in Karlsruhe. Yeah, so.
Yeah, that we were at Toll House, which I must recommend to everyone as just the most gorgeous, gorgeous venue with lovely people. I mean, they made us the best food I think I've ever had in a gig.
Oh, yeah, I'm always here for good food.
So we were still backstage after the show. They were going to take the food away. And we were like, don't take the food away. So we sat after the show just like eating the roast potatoes off the tray, just being like, this is the best life. We're living our best life.
Wow. I hope you come back and then I'll be there. Yeah.
I absolutely will. Thank you so much for talking to me. And I hope we speak again.
Yes, I hope so too. Thank you very much for your time. Goodbye.
Take care.
Take care.
Bye for now.
da bin ich wieder. Das war unsere Folge mit Rima Müller-Westernhagen. Ein, wie ich finde, wunderschönes Interview. Und wenn du als Sängerin, Musikerin oder Songwriterin vielleicht bisher immer auf diesen einen Deal gewartet hast, dass dir jemand einen Deal anbietet und die helfen dir dann, deine Musik zu produzieren und du jetzt vielleicht auch ein bisschen das hinterfragt hast, ob es nur so geht, dann laden wir dich vom Tonstudio für Frauen dazu ein, zu lernen, deine Musik in Zukunft selber zu produzieren. Lerne mit uns, deine eigene Musikproduzentin zu werden, denn heutzutage ist es mit nur ganz wenig Equipment möglich, dir ein professionelles Homestudio einzurichten. Das haben schon über 1500 Musikerinnen mithilfe unserer Equipment Roadmap gemacht. Und es ist dank richtig toller Software mittlerweile eben auch möglich, deine Musik selber zu produzieren, wenn du weißt, wie das geht. Und wenn du mehr dazu erfahren möchtest, dann schau doch in den Shownotes vorbei. Dort findest du sowohl den Link zu unserer Equipment Roadmap als auch den Link zu einem Erstgespräch mit mir, wo du mir persönlich deine Fragen stellen kannst rund um das Thema Musikproduktion. Vielleicht hast du schon ein bisschen Vorerfahrung oder du hast schon erstes Equipment und weißt einfach nicht, wo du anfangen sollst. Dann unterhalte dich gerne mit mir. Wir freuen uns immer auf dich. Und wenn du mehr Tipps rund um Musikproduktion und dein Leben als unabhängige Musikerin erfahren möchtest, dann abonniere doch gerne diesen Podcast. Und wenn du magst, schalte gerne nächste Woche wieder ein, hier bei Songs aufnehmen leicht gemacht vom Tonstudio für Frauen. Bis dahin wünschen wir dir viel Freude mit deiner Musik, deine größten Fans, Adrian und Anna.